for the crazy hours, but we'll keep it short. I definitely leaving him by 8:35, so we'll keep it short. And also, I want to leave. It's an important topic. Actually, the whole purpose of the VOD has nothing to do with the topic. The purpose of the VOD was just to see each other. It's a shame we can't do it in person, but the purpose of the VOD is just to connect on a few, you know, insights. Don't think it's just, we think it's for you. It's for us too. Because when you give a VOD and you speak to some of the Talmidim from yesteryear, you say, oh, wow, I remember when that guy was in yeshiva. Wow, they're still Jewish. Maybe I should continue one more day. So it's good for the Rebbeim. It's very good for him. I remember Misa. This is not the VOD, pre-VOD story. Those are always the best ones. But when I was in yeshiva, so they had Musa, and we're all out of yeshiva here. Let me see if anyone, is anyone on there? Yeah, we're all out of yeshivas. So we could speak as one group. So if anyone that was in Queens knows, they had these Musachaburs. The Musachaburs were the Chazaras Ashmuzim. And in Forest Hills, in my day, when they were Chazin the Rashiva Shmuzim, so they had call guys, they split you up in different groups of, you know, these two people by this call guy, these two, three people by this call guy. But what would usually happen is that most guys just ended up going to Dr. Goldman, fondly known now as Rabbi Goldman, Rabbi Dr. Goldman. Everyone just ended up by him. I don't know how in my day, that's that way it was. And Dr. Goldman would always say, oh, the Rashiva Shmuz, you know, and there were like 50 guys there. So I was learning with two call guys. It was me. They put two call guys with me. So I always felt like really, what's the word? Inadequate. That they, not only was it's usually two guys with one call guy by me, that two call guys on me. So I was always like a little bit feeling inadequate. So I moseyed my way once, and I built up the courage to, I'm more or less a compliant personality. I'm a little compliant. So one time I built up the courage and I decided to be controversial and disobedient. And I left my chabura and I went to Dr. Goldman. And Rabbi Naaman Zatzal came over to me, put his arm around me as only he could, and says, you need to go back there to those two Avrechim. So I rolled my eyes like, okay, Rabbi, you caught me, but like, look at these, there are 100 guys over there. You know, what's so terrible if one more guy goes to Dr. Goldman? What's so terrible? What do you think is going to happen to me? So that's when I learned, you know, the lesson of life, which I probably telegraphed the end of the story. Rabbi Naaman said, we didn't put you with them, we put them with you. They wanted, these two color guys did not go over the shmooze. They would not chaza the shmooze. They, you know, so they wanted to give them a hechruch to have to say over the shmooze. So they put me with them. And I never even had a havamina. Here I was, 22 years old. I never had a havamina that was the cheshbon. Not a havamina. So Rabbi Naaman wanted me to go there so they would have to say over the shmuzim. And he told me they desperately need to do this. So I want to tell you a story. Subsequent to the story, the story happened 20 years later, 25 years later. Okay, after this maisa happened, 25 years later, I'm in Miami many years already, and I was in an out-of-town community visiting, and I bump into one of those two older guys, and the subject came up about shmuzim, and he's in chinuch, and you know, in he teaches, you know, whatever, not Beis Medrash, younger than Beis Medrash, okay, not in the Chafetz Chaim school. So the subject came up of saying over Dibrei Torah for Shabbos. So I asked him, do you ever say over the Rosh Yeshiva Shmuzim? I don't know why I asked that question, but I asked him, says the Rosh Yeshiva Shmuzim, you can't say over the Rosh Yeshiva Shmuzim. They're juvenile. Those are juvenile. You can't say that. You can barely say anything. You can barely say anything over. It's just juvenile. So I said, oh my gosh, Rabbi Neumann was right. You know, so many years later, he saw that they didn't work on the shmuzim. The Rashiva shmuzim are not juvenile. They're very complex. And they, you know, they pierce human interpersonal relationships. And okay, but that they probably thought it was juvenile. So anyway, that's my introduction to the story. So the reason why I'm saying all that story is that it might look that I'm giving this year to you, but Nassim Yeshaya probably got, Schwartz probably got wind of the fact that I probably need to, you're there for me. So it just it depends how you look at it. So yeah, that's my preamble to the, really to all the Vadim. Yeah, that's, I view it as a big schuss. Anyway, so I think it's an important topic. Originally, I was going to write peer pressure. That sound too trite of a topic. You know, we're not little kids, so what does that have to do with us? But we all have to deal with putting ourselves and our, you know, putting ourselves in the right group. That's a very, very, very important. So first, I wanted to say over something I heard from Rabbi Luban. Said over a powerful, powerful insight onto this. So in the parish of Adam and Chava, so it says that by the Nachash, the glare of my glasses is bagging me in the eye. So when Chava ate from the Etz Hadas, if you follow the psukim, there's like 10, 15 psukim, you know, back and forth, a whole dialogue between the Nachash and Chava. And why she should eat, and she says no, and then he says, you know, nothing will happen, and a certain chachma, and then, you know, Rashi says, brings down that the Nachash pushed her into the Eitz Hadas, and so nothing happened, so, and eventually she ate from the Eitz Hadas, a whole back and forth. But then when came time for Adam to eat from the Eitz Hadas, it says that Chava gave Adam the pre from the Eitz Hadas, Vatochel, and he ate it. Like four words. The whole story with Adam took four words. The whole Maisa with Chava took many, many psukim. So I don't remember who Rabbi Luban quoted, but the question is that why, when it came to Adam, I'm sorry, to Chava, was it a whole sichsuch back and forth? When it came to Adam, like 1, 2, 3, like, why so short with Adam? So a lot of jokes in there, but you know, the wife-husband jokes. But I think Rav Luban said that some of the Farshim say, because when Adam was given the Etz Hadas, everyone was doing it already. Everyone. Who's everyone? It was just Chava, but the whole world was eating from the Etz Hadas. So he ate from the Etz Hadas. It was like, there was nothing to think about. Had Chava not eaten from the Etz Hadas, Adam never would have eaten from the Etz Hadas. So he never even digested and went through in his mind, didn't have to process and negotiate. He ate from the Etz Hadas because Chava was eating from the Etz Hadas. And just the way it is, that's what people are doing. I was in a shul and I saw like 10, 15 people are drinking coffee in the middle of Psukah D'Zimra. It's the newest thing. Hopefully not new all over the place, but you know, and I'm sure it started with one guy, and it was Nusach Sfarad, so they didn't say Baruch Sh'amar yet, so it's not a hefsik to make the bracha. Some wise guy came up with a heter, Meir Rabbanim, and whatever, and he ate it, and then it just spreads. And now I don't know what, you know, what's in your communities. Some of the people on the air in my community, but one of the newest things going around is scooters on Shabbos, scooters to shul. So, like, I'm not berating it. I'm not big enough to make fun of anyone. I'm just saying that it starts from one or two people, and then people are doing it. And there's a reason why certain communities take on personalities. You know, a community takes on the tov and the ra. You think about it, the frumkeit in different communities are already notorious for where they're holding, notoriously bad or famous for good, but they take on personalities based on the group. So when a person is looking to move somewhere and be somewhere, you have to find out. One fellow told me here in North Miami Beach, I was by Shalom Zachar, and I asked him, you know, he's living here for 35, 40 years. So the story happened like 15 years ago. So I said, you know, just to make conversation at a Shalom Zachar, like, what, you know, you're talking to just people who are acquaintances. Why did you move to Florida? Seemed like an innocent enough question. Oh, my Shver, I had a business. I don't know. Usually it's like, you know, it's a good conversation piece. So I asked that question. He says, I'll tell you a story that happened. No. The way that happened was Rabbi Scheinberg had just been Nifter. Rabbi Scheinberg had just been Nifter. And I asked him, he said, Rabbi Scheinberg once stayed in my house. I said, oh, you have any stories? So he said, yeah, one story. Rabbi Scheinberg, when he's eating the Suda, he did not take his sefer out of his head out of the sefer. Even when he was eating the Suda, he was like, had a sefer open. And Rabbi Nachman spoke on Shavuos over here, and he said over there, Rabbi Scheinberg used to wash the dishes. It's brought down in the book every Motzei Shabbos, and he had a sefer by the sink. But this person told me similar, that at the Suda, he ate the Suda, but he had a sefer. He was learning from a sefer. So at this guy's house, which, okay, I mean, that's not our Masorah, you know, necessarily, but the story is gewaldic. So Rabbi Scheinberg, at one point during the Suda, he was talking. At one point, Rabbi Scheinberg asked the Balabas, and what brought you down to Florida? He asked him that question, but he didn't take his eyes out of the sefer. And this fellow said, you know, I came here once as a bacher. I'd come for a visit, and I liked it. So the only time he took his head out of the sefer is when I said that. He opened his eyes and says, and based on that, you moved here? Like, how do you move to a community? Who knows what it was going to be? You can't just move to a community. You got to check it out. You know, that's putting yourself somewhere. It's putting yourself, and who knows where that, what that's going to bring. So, yeah, if it's the right thing to do, good. If it's not the right thing to do, you don't just do trial and error. You have to do it. You don't just say, well, I liked it. You went, you liked it. So those things are big shilas. I heard this story from Mrs. Shames, and also, you know, Ibadlachaimus Shames, Jeanette Levine. The old days, I remember in Yeshiva, even before my time, there were two families that lived here from Hollywood. Yehuda Goldenberg, I see, is on the air. He probably knows this, you know, better than I do. He's here longer than I am. But there were like two or three families from Hollywood that had the temerity to send their kids to Torah Semis. Torah Semis was not the in place. It was a fledgling elementary school with 150 to 200 kids. And, you know, there were no frills. It was bare bones. Right? Bauman was a one-man show. Right, Bauman and Mrs. Tamir were like one man show. And, you know, they sent their kids, and that gave people, okay, if, you know, Jeanette Levine sending her kids, and the Shames is sending, and, you know, a couple others, you know, sent. And Hollywood's like probably we probably have more kids or even amount of kids in Hollywood right now than we have from North Miami Beach. So it's pretty amazing that certain people, you know, create a certain Seviva, we could get the Schar Keneged Kulam, you know, being in a place and you having the ability to go, you know, outside the norms and standing up for something. I saw a great vort on this. It says that, you know, as we blow shofar, there's a mitzvah to blow shofar every Rosh Hashanah. It's a mitzvah deraisa. But there's one other time that is a mitzvah deraisa to blow shofar. And it comes once every 50 years on Yom Kippur of Yovel. On the 10th of Tishrei, every 50 years, there's a mitzvah deraisa to blow the shofar. I know we blow the shofar now on Yom Kippur, but our blowing shofar is really just a minhag. You could still eat if you didn't hear the shofar. You know, it's just a minhag to blow the shofar. Signifies the end of the tainus, but, you know, it's but the mitzvah of the shofar. Now, what's the shofar blowing by Yovel? Because all the slaves, all the Eved Ivries that people have go free by Yovel. Even those that decided not to go out after 6 years, they pierce their ear and they stay, you know, Eved Le'olam, you know, all the Parshas Mishpatim, you did that. So everyone goes back to their original families. What's the point of the shofar? So the Sefer HaChinuch says, I think I said this over at the Beis Menach Shmuz, the Sefer HaChinuch says, I think I heard this from Rabbi Rausch, the Shem Rabbi Rausch, I didn't hear from Rabbi Rausch, that since everyone's slaves are going free, it's like people are heartbroken. They're heartbroken, like, hey, it's just like, you know, if anyone for the marrieds here could appreciate it, but you're growing up, you know, you have a cleaning lady. You know what it is when you lose a cleaning lady? Your cleaning lady quits or your babysitter quits. Oh, yeah, this is a crisis, Shein Kamo. So can you imagine your Eved Ivri, who's with you for 5 years, 6 years, leaves? This is disaster. So the reason why there's a shofar is it reminds people that everyone's slaves are going now. So it makes people tzaris rabim chatzi nechama. It's the Sefer, it says tzaris rabim nechama, it doesn't say chatzi, it says full. That when everyone's, you know, is doing it together, it's much easier. So that's another thing. When we do things in a group and the whole group is doing it, it's amazing. I was walking to shul. I don't know if you had the same experiences, all of you, when you were this past Shavuos night. I was going from my house to yeshiva. How long am I living here? I'm here in Miami since 94. I moved to North Miami Beach a year later in 95. That was Miami Beach first year. So let's call it 95. So 95 to 2000 is 25, there's 26 years. So 26 years I'm walking to yeshiva, okay? And I've learned in yeshiva, given shir all night long for 26 years. And I gave shir this past Shavuos night to 12th grade shir. I was not tired, not one wink. I planted myself down at 12:20, 12:25. I gave shir, and I gave the shir that like parallel to Rabbi Luban's shir for all the people who, you know, can't handle Rabbi Luban's shir. The high school guys came. I went to 6 o'clock. I didn't yawn until like Agdamas. Poor Agdamas. Okay, I don't know what Agdamas did to get that spot. You know, it's like the worst spot at the Aguda convention, like the third slot. Starting at 3 o'clock till mincha, like the one who's divvying the 5 o'clock slot before everyone comes, but in the third speech. So in nishta he, nishta her, you're not the first speaker and no one's there. So people are all burnt out before any speakers come. So Agdamas. But last year, everything was closed except for Kal Chasidim in North Miami Beach. Everything was closed. Kal Chasidim opened up like an hour before Shavuos, but nobody went to shul. and the yeshiva was closed. So I learned by myself. And what was it so different? I asked a couple of people on the block, do you want to learn? We went outside. By 2:05, I could not keep my eyes open. I said, okay, I have to go to sleep. I couldn't do it. I mamish couldn't do it. So what do you think it was? I wasn't sick with COVID. So do you, and I don't know if any of you had the same experience that you were home alone. I couldn't learn. I could not learn, even though I had charuses. But when you're not with a tzibur, you just can't do the same things. It just doesn't work. And it's just remarkable that it made such a difference. So you see how much you owe. Like we think that I'm helping the yeshiva. What kind am I helping the yeshiva? Yeshiva is helping me. If not for the yeshiva, I wouldn't be able to learn. I'll tell you one maisa. I'll keep my eye on the clock. I heard this myself from when the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal was Nifter. So he was a very special man, Rosh Yeshiva. Aside from my Rebbe, but he was so smart and human, just understanding human beings. So I was in, the Rosh Yeshiva passed away before Pesach. I was in Brooklyn for Pesach by my in-laws, and I davened in Tiferes Yisrael, and I saw Rabbi Ginsburg, Zichrono Livracha. Rabbi Ginsburg was the Rosh Yeshiva's right-hand man. He was the executive director, so close to Rosh Yeshiva all the years, served him so loyally. So I asked him if I can come over to his house. Rabbi Schlissel, who's a Rebbe here, for those of you who know the Rebbeim here, Rabbi Schlissel is the 11th grade honors Rebbe. And Rabbi Schlissel's mother is Rabbi Ginsburg's daughter. Everyone knows Rabbi Ginsburg's sons, Yosef Ginsburg, Safa Ginsburg. But their daughter is Mrs. Schlissel, Yitzhak Schlissel's mother. So Rabbi Ginsburg, yes, if you can tell me a story about the Reshiva. So not the typical stories that you hear from all the mechanchim and all the people working yeshiva as Rebbeim. Rabbi Ginsburg told me such a powerful story. And anybody here on the year remember Forest Hills? Yehuda, you remember Forest Hills? I remember Yehuda babysitting in your house. I was learning with Chaim Pollack. Do you know who that is even in Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah.
So Chaim Pollack and I were chavrusas. And I'm pretty sure it was like 1981 or 1982. And we were learning on Burn Street because your parents had to go away and they needed a babysitter. And we learned in your house. So were you born already? I don't want to give away your age.
I was born before Burn Street.
Huh? You were born before Burn Street.
Yeah.
So I babysat for you.
Yeah, I guess so.
And anyone that knows Forest Hills knows there was the Beis Medrash. You go inside, you go like down like 100 steps below sea level. And the windows in the yeshiva were like on the ceiling. You could open up a few windows and you saw the street. So the yeshiva was literally in a basement. The whole yeshiva was like in a basement. And there was upstairs, there was actually a normal looking Beis Medrash, and that was Rabbi Ginsburg's shul. They had assemblies there for the high school, but it was used. Rabbi Ginsburg, made a minyan there. It was a shul for the Baal Batim. When they sold the building, the yeshiva was living. When they built Kew Garden Hills, and the yeshiva wasn't going to be in Forest Hills anymore, so the property in Forest Hills was no longer needed. So Rabbi Harris and Rabbi Grimblatt were in charge with the yeshiva, and they wanted to sell it because the yeshiva needed the money, and they were able to get millions of dollars for that building. I think they ended up selling it for like $5-6 million. And Rabbi Ginsburg told me that the Rosh Yeshiva told him, sell the building. Now, the Rosh Yeshiva was against selling it, said, keep it. I don't know real estate. I don't know if anyone here in real estate, I forgot what everyone does. Aaron Hertzberg, are you a real estate guy? Ari Solomon, I don't know if he's real estate. I'd love to know what Forest Hills and real estate value go up. Rosh Yeshiva told them not to sell the building. Right, Ginsburg told me. Rosh Yeshiva said, do not sell the building, but they needed the money, and Rosh Yeshiva allowed Rabbi Grimblatt, Rabbi Harris, who was partners then, two out of three win. So it's the way it goes. Tough noogies, they told the receiver, tough noogies. Now I'm joking. I don't know how it went down, but they ended up selling the building. But even after they decided to sell the building, the Reshiva came to Rav Ginsburg and said, okay, you're selling the building, fine, but don't sell your shul. If you know Forest Hills, the shul was like built as an extension. So sell everything except for that. All it was, a separate entrance, and it wasn't attached to anything. Sell everything but that. Says, why would they do that? He goes, why not? You know, they'll sell you, it probably wouldn't cost you any money. You probably sell it for the same price and don't sell it. Rav Ginsburg told me, I didn't want the shul. Like, what do I need it for? I was 70 years old. What do I need the shul for? And the Reshiva went like this to him. Rav Ginsburg told me the story. Like, he went like this to him. You're crazy. You sell the shul? I said to Rav Ginsburg, why did the Reshiva not want you to sell the shul? Like, for what? The shul, it was a Moshe, it was a Canaan of like 11 people, 12 people. What did he need it for? So Rabbi Ginsburg looked at me and said, the Reshiva wanted me to have the shul because he knows that if I have the shul, I'm going to have to open up a sefer every week to say a shmooze and speak, give a drasha, and, you know, continue to have to serve the Baal Batim, and it will force me to continue to grow. So, and I know Rabbi Ginsburg learned. He used to learn in the Beis Medrash, you know, it was morning Seder. I know he used to learn, but I asked him, seriously, no joke, he wasn't joking mood. I asked him, did he feel that he lost out by selling it? Because he didn't listen, he didn't push. And he said he absolutely lost out. Reshiva was someone, he knew Rabbi Ginsburg. He knew that the person will, you know, will steig more. And sometimes the way the places we have to put ourselves in are the places that you need someone to take the lead, whether it's being a shul or community or to run a youth group or to start youth groups, or anything that puts us out, oh, wow, it's going to be very hard. You know, we want to be able to be off. We started a mechanchim kolel over here. Mechanchim kolel, you know what that means? That means the rebbeim are being offered to learn from 8:30 to 10 at night. So 8:30 to 10, my gosh, I'm busy every single night. 8:30 to 10, I can't commit to doing that. I mean, I want to be able to help out, but had to decide, and everyone, they wanted everyone to do it, 8:30 to 10. There's some Baal Batim who wanted to create, you know, Kol Torah and the yeshiva. It shouldn't just be for Beis Medrash guys. It should be Kama, you know, not, we're not trying to compete. We're just trying to make it a bigger Makom Torah. So they wanted every Rebbe to join. And I took a deep breath. How am I supposed to do this? 8:30 to 10? Do you know what I have to go through on certain days and meetings and board meetings and prepare for shiur? It means, well, I'm going to prepare for shiur first 11 o'clock at night. And, you know, like, how am I going to do that? And what happens when there's a schmooze out there? Oh my gosh, we torture. But you know something? I sat down with my wife. I decided that, you know, that's not how it goes. You make your priorities. There's an opportunity to learn. I'm going to do that first. Okay, let's say yes to that. I'm going to fit everything else in. I'm going to do that first. So I checked it off. I said, okay, I'm going to do it. But there are 22 rebbeim learning now from 8:30 to 10. There's no way, if anyone would have asked me to learn every night of the week, five nights a week, from 8:30 to 10, there's no way I could have done it. It's not possible. It's just not possible. I wouldn't have the time. 8:30 to 10, how's it possible? I don't get home till 6:37, and then, you know, who knows what's going on. But I just said yes, and, you know, made a hechrach. Now you have to do it. Now you look like, if you don't show up, you're a loser. And you just do it. I remember with this one, I'll close. When I came to Miami, first time branching, was when Rabbi Grumblatt moved here. So Rabbi Grumblatt moved here while he was still in the finishing up in the Colo in Queens, he had a good opportunity to recruit us. It was every day he nudged us. So myself, Rabbi Sharfman Zatzal, and four others he recruited to come. And his big pitch, what he's going to help us say Torah Chaburus. And we were first starting out saying Chaburus, we're going to say Torah Chaburus. And I asked him every week, like, when are we starting? When are we starting? He says, soon, after Sukkot. After Sukkot, I asked him, it was soon, another couple of weeks. So after 2 weeks, he walks into the basement. This is on 41st Street. This is before 79th Street, so whatever. So he goes into the basement. He takes a piece of paper, and he hangs it up on the wall. And I looked at it. It said, D. Sharfman, November 5th. Y. Wiener, November 11th. M. Palgon, November 18th. M. Yachnes, November 25th. S. Muscat, December 4th. And I forgot who else we had. Zemworth, you know, December after that. So I ran over to Rabbi Grunblatt. I said, Rabbi Grunblatt, how could you just put my name up? And I asked you so many times, when are we going to start preparing how to say Torah Chaburus? And I was serious. And you just put my name up? I mean, you didn't give us any training. So he told me, as only Rabbi Grunblatt could joke, that's the training. You put your name up on the wall with a date, a name, and a date, and that will get you to say a Torah Chabura. And he was right, because I didn't want to be embarrassed and be the only one not to say a Torah Chabura. So I had to be up tonight, who knows how many hours and hours and hours preparing that. I remember in tortured myself, but I came up with a Torah Chabura. And that's how you put yourself in the right group. By myself, I never, ever, ever, ever would have done such a thing. So anyway, Hayos Vinavreinu, sometimes we have to go outside our comfort zone, put yourself with a group that's doing the right thing, and Bez Hashem, they'll carry you the rest of the way. So even a vod like this, I think all of you should volunteer to Rabbi Schwartz to volunteer to give the vod. It's the best way to get yourself to do things, whatever the opportunity is, whatever Hashem sends you away, Bez Hashem. And that's good. We need all the schusim, but you need the schusim for yourselves and your families, and Bez Hashem, it should be good.